Right
on.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My co-host Sandy Williams is back. How you doing, Sandy?
I'm doing all right. It's a beautiful day, probably.
Yeah, well, it was a good thing.
I wake up every morning with that expectation.
Well, it was absolutely beautiful Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Ideal weather, right? You really couldn't beat it.
Spent it outdoors all weekend. It was great.
And so did I. But let me ask you, Sandy. I was watching the Talking Head shows, and I saw the attorney, one of the attorneys was going to be the lead guy for Donald Trump in this case. And he kept referring to that this is a witch hunt because it's really just freedom of speech. And what Donald Trump is doing is freedom of speech. And so he doesn't believe that any of this is going to go anywhere because it's nothing more than freedom of speech.
Well, obviously, that's going to be the defense associated with his speech on January 6th. And all of his discussions of the fraud that's the supposed frauds that occurred during the election process and how it was that he was cheated out of the presidency. But all speech isn't free. Everyone knows about the Oliver Wendell Holmes discussion of freedom of speech with respect to shouting fire in a crowded movie theater. That's speech. But if people get trampled to death because of your false claim that there was a fire, you've committed a crime. You know, and so that. Lots of kinds of speech are crime. As William Barr pointed out, whenever there's a conspiracy is all about speech. Nothing happened yet. People have just been talking about what they're trying to make happen. That's a conspiracy. That's one of the charges against Trump. You know, Trump, their attorneys are asserting that his social media posting this weekend, if you come after me, I'll come after you.
Yeah, who's he talking about?
That's a very sinister kind of a statement, right? I'll come after you.
Who is he referring to?
And who is he talking
right.
to? Sure. And so, you know, each of the officers of the court that's coming after him in the way of bringing an indictment against him and charging him, they're coming after him. You know, judges who might come down on him, they're coming after him. This definitely reads like a threat. And if a normal defendant in a criminal proceeding ever made a direct or implicit threat against people who are either prosecutors or witnesses, potential witnesses. You know, if you come after me, I'll come after you. That definitely could be aimed at the witnesses in this proceeding, right? Michael Pence.
Right.
Looks like he'll be a witness. Was this aimed at Michael Pence? So all of that stuff, that potential threat aspect of this lifts it out of the freedom of speech department. And so, you know, in this protective order proceeding that's being held today in court, it's altogether likely that a judge is going to, that the magistrate or judge, whoever is handling this hearing, is going to direct that such statements cannot be made in the future. Anything that can be viewed as an explicit or implicit threat against potential witnesses or officers of the court or other people related to the proceeding, or his bail would be lifted. That would be the normal process. You know, in a criminal proceeding, a drug dealer who might suggest that anybody who comes after me in court, I'm going to come after you. I mean, that's clearly not going to be viewed as free speech in that context. And I think what Trump is trying to do now and his attorneys is just take free speech and use it as a ready defense for any and all verbal conduct.
So, Sandy, I also heard his attorney say, well, he really did believe that he won. So because you have to prove that he didn't believe that he won. What?
Well, this question of whether his proceeding, his processes that he pursued, including that January 6th proceeding, our freedom of speech, would go to this question of whether he was asserting a claim that he felt justified about, you know, that I was cheated out of this election.
And that he really believed he was.
And if he really believed he was cheated out of the election, then his assertions of being cheated out of the election might be defensible. But What they're going to prove, however, is that he had lots of people telling him he wasn't cheated out of the election, including 46 courts or whatever that huge number of litigations were in which they lost every one of them, including his private counsel, including the people who surrounded him, who were giving him advice surrounding this. So that, you know, there's a very limited circle of people who he could point at and say, well, these people were telling me, and I believe them, that I was won the election. And even those people who will appear to be witnesses here, and it looks like most of them are going to say, yeah, no, we never really thought that he lost this election.
But can you
won this election?
Can you really prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt what was in his mind? Because that's what they're saying. You got to, you know,
well, a jury,
that's going to be the measuring stick.
Jury has to decide. And, you know, whether that ends up being a defense for the January 6th conduct, you know, whether he believed it or not, he was trying to incite a crowd to block this transfer of power. And that probably doesn't require that they prove that he believed that he actually won. Because what he was trying to do with his speech there was to incite conduct to keep something from the wheels of government from moving forward as they were going to move forward. But, you know, it's an interesting issue. You know, some of his conduct probably would have a defense that he actually believed it, his speech to the public. Some of it could be defended in that regard. But I think that they're going to have plenty of fact evidence that a jury could rely on.
This is a real freedom of speech to the average person, to a layman such as myself, we think is pretty simplistic. It says you have freedom of speech. But to a barrister like you and others, it's more than just, hey, you have freedom of speech.
Sure.
I mean, that's defined.
Oh, yeah. And I think every defendant knows that if he goes to a witness and says, I'm going to get you if you appear in court against me. Now, that's speech, right? But that's not free speech. You know, that's not the kind of speech that isn't going to get you in trouble, and everyone knows it. So I think everyone understands that there are boundaries to speech. It's like standing up in a crowded movie theater and having a prank, thinking it's a prank to shout, fire, fire, and then watching people get trampled to death. You know, that's not free speech.
But Sandy, you said everyone knows it. But yet that's what they're going to be using.
Well,
that's pretty flimsy, right?
Well, the fact is that the boundaries for speech are hard. It's hard to write down in law exactly what the restriction is on free speech. And as a result, there really are very few laws that are written that proscribe the range of free speech. Rather, it's like the Supreme Court's decisions regarding pornography. You know it when you see it.
Right.
and you know it when people have gone outside the boundary of free speech and are using speech to perpetuate a crime.
So there's gray area.
Sure. And that's what they're relying on, is just trying to get everything that he's doing into a gray area instead of a black and white area. Because clearly there are lots of kinds of speech. Fraud is done with speech. It's always done with speech, right? I lead you to believe something that's not true, and I induce you to do something with my fraud. That's all speech.
Let's go to Bill from McConnemore. Good morning to you, Bill. You say what, sir?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. You guys do awesome. I hope you win some awards. I hope the station wins awards for excellence in broadcasting. You're bringing people together on both sides and discussing an issue. But when it comes to Trump, I think it's cut and dried. He's a domestic terrorist. We've dealt with terrorists before in our country. This isn't the first time there was a terrorist attack on our country. We know how to deal with that. This discussion on free speech from his attorney is an insult to intellectual people or even common people of our country. We know the difference. Don't try and snow the snowman. Don't create all these illusions. He committed a crime. He's got to do the time. Today, if it was up to me, he'd be reprimanded into custody. Or he'd wear an ankle bracelet or whatever. He would be censored. This guy makes a threat and we don't do anything about it? Are you kidding me? They kept saying, well, he was a president. Yes, he was, but that doesn't mean presidents can't be terrorists. He was. We know his past history long before he got into politics, indicating he didn't live a very righteous life. He definitely didn't live a righteous life. He with all the charges that followed him, even up to before he became president, of course this country's going to go after a man like that. He has zero integrity, zero honesty, and I don't know about his lack of sanity or lack of sanity. I really don't know, because somebody that awful, I just don't think they understand right from wrong. So, but thanks for letting me. By the way, Earl and Sandy, maybe you remember Gordon Hinckley with Ask Your Neighbor.
I remember Gordon Hinckley. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
You guys are creating that same concept. Ask your neighbor about politics. But what I love what you do is you bring CJ and Gary and all these other guys that disagree to the forefront. That's exactly what it takes. Thanks, and have a wonderful day.
Hey,
awesome.
Hey, Bill, bellissimo.
Thank you, Bill.
But Sandy, he explains what you and I attempt to do.
Yeah.
And he gets it.
Well, and, I mean, but that posting over the weekend was the posting of, Al Capone would post things like that. That's thug. That's thug talk. No, it really is. You come after me, I'm coming after you. That's it. I mean, those are his exact words.
But Sandy, he'll say, I wasn't serious. If the pressure really comes, he's going to say I wasn't serious. Do you think he's going to back off? I mean, I don't think, Sandy, he's going to back off.
Well, I don't. They've
got to do something to force him.
Absolutely. I'm sure his attorneys are squirming right now about that social posting. And I'm sure the judges, the court is squirming about the fact that they feel compelled to do something.
Is he threatening the judge he says that?
Well, he's threatening anybody who thinks that they could, anybody who reads that who could feel threatened. Yes. I mean, he's announced that I'm going to sink the deep state. I'm going to declare war on the deep state.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Yeah, what's up?
Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun this afternoon with a high of 79. Northerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, lows around 60. A mix of clouds and sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 83. Mid-80s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for scattered storms Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 66 degrees.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup starting at 6 AM. Up North News, 8.
The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, Bill said a mouthful. I think people, Sandy, are really just having enough of this. And Trump doesn't endear himself to many people, even people who say, well, okay, we're given the benefit of the doubt. It's hard when he keeps doing these things, Sandy.
Well, I think Trump sort of properly understands that his best defense is the public, right? His public. And whereas most judicial proceedings and criminal proceedings are confined to the courtroom, and the judge sets up prescriptions to make sure that all the evidence is only discussed within the courtroom, so you don't taint a jury. I think Donald Trump understands that his main pressure point is the fact that he's an ex-president, that pursuing him criminally has the appearance of a potential political witch hunt, you know, that you're chasing after a political opponent, and is that right or not? And so he wants people basically to focus on that. He wants his people to focus on that. So I think we can expect that from his standpoint, he feels it's absolutely important and that he be able to communicate directly to his public and that he be able to stir them up and keep them stirred up in a manner that is, in a way, indirectly threatening to the democracy.
You know, Sandy, and they keep referring to the Joe Biden judicial system, the Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Well, I know. I mean, the notion is that Biden's president, so he's responsible for all these indictments, whether they occur in Georgia or New York or with a special prosecutor that's supposedly outside the reins and apparently is outside the reins, or if it happens in courts in which none of the judges were appointed by Biden. And most of the ones who have been appointed actually have been appointed by Trump, the ones that have dealt right. with him so far. So, yeah, I mean, there is this effort to paint this as a witch hunt by the incumbent president against his potential competitor running for president.
Let's go to Mark from Racine. Good morning to you, Mark. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Hi, good morning. Hey, just to set the table here, I do not think in any way that Trump is doing any of the right things. I think he should be found guilty on all of these charges. It's pretty obvious, but we do have the legal system. So one thing I saw the Sunday talk shows too, and I saw his lawyer, and his lawyer mentioned what you mentioned that people told him that this was illegal. It wasn't going to work. There's no fraud. That's true. But as Vice President Pence said, he had a group of lawyers, crackpots is the term Pence used, that did tell him that some of these moves were legal. And his lawyers would say, for instance, Eastman, constitutional attorney, heads of department somewhere. I don't know how prestigious the university is or anything. And he'd say, hey, this guy told me we could do this. This is something that can be hashed out between, there's these kind of discussions they're saying between constitutional law professors and people who study these type of things. And it might not be illegal, but then he could say, hey, I got the advice of this guy and he has the chops, you know? So yes, you can say that a lot of people told him it wasn't, but he also has the three or four that he could say did tell him it was legal.
It said ignorance is no excuses. Can that?
Well, you know, if this is the dicey aspect of white collar crime, and there are things that are clearly a matter of natural law, right? Killing somebody is different, but the areas of what this is essentially white collar crime. This is violating laws with conduct that is not physically assaultive or trespass upon other people. I agree with the caller that there are these complexities that are going to get introduced into it. Trump clearly was shopping for his crackpot lawyers to find people who would agree with him, and basically fired lawyers who didn't agree with him until he found the ones who did. And we'll find out what the judicial system thinks about that. But that clearly is going to be one of his defenses with respect to his conduct.
Sandy, you're not saying that, okay, I'm relying on what my lawyers told me. My lawyers told me the wrong thing, And so somehow the lawyers told him the wrong thing. He gets a pass because his lawyers told him the wrong thing, even though he may have committed the crime. Is that what you're saying?
That's— well, his speech crime, you know, the things he was saying about losing the election, whether those were
right,
whether those were false claims or not, is what's going to rest on this question of whether he could be allowed to believe his lawyers, whether he told the crowd to go down to the Capitol and block the transfer of power. That doesn't get a defense. That won't deserve a defense that his lawyers were giving him advice that permitted him to.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ. CJ, what's going on, man? Good morning.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Sandy, you are incorrect. The U.S. District Attorney Judge appointed by Barack Obama.
Well, I said he wasn't appointed by Biden.
Four indictments.
I said he wasn't appointed by Biden.
Well, yeah, be honest, Andy. Who you can't even— we talk about the Trump appointed judges, but you never once say the Obama or the Biden appointed judges.
I did want to ask you, next time you got on, I had a question to ask you, CJ, because you asked me whether I'd read the Durham report, and you put great faith in Special Counsel Durham's report. Is that because he's a special counsel who is outside the realm of political control, and therefore you put great credence in what John Durham says? Or why do you want me to read the Durham report? The Miller report was written by a special counsel, and Jack Smith is a special counsel. They all hold exactly the same station. They hold the same position that John Durham held. They were appointed as special counsel by an attorney general. But why do you put greater credence in the Durham report? Because I'm just curious, because is it because of what Durham wrote and you believe what he wrote, or is it because of who appointed Durham and you put more credence in that? Of course, Durham, I think, was appointed by William Barr, who you don't put great credence in now. But how do you decide who you're going to believe and who you aren't? Because it's the same question of how do we decide what judges we trust? Is the trust in a judge dependent upon who appointed them? Because our judicial system was set up in an effort to try and make it so that we could trust our judicial system regardless of that. So I really am interested.
You actually want to hear my answer.
Because that's why Durham, he posed the question.
Durham. Okay, go ahead and talk over me again. Can I respond once without you talking over me? The facts that Durham found out is that Mueller's report was a joke. The facts that Durham found out where it started. It was the Clinton campaign. It was the FBI that covered it up. They went to social media. The two tiers of justice is loud and clear if you were actually cared about justice. When you read the Durham report, we found the Mueller report was a waste of time and money.
Well,
and Durham report reported facts.
Well,
and the mere fact that the 51 intelligence officers in 2016 covered up that.
Listen, we don't have time to go back over all of that.
So what you're telling me is you decided to believe the Durham report because of what it said in the report. And it wasn't because Durham was appointed indirectly by an officer of the Trump administration. Because, the Mueller report was filled with facts as well. And Jack Smith's indictment of Trump is filled with facts or factual assertions. So I just think it's important because our judicial system and our whole enforcement of law system is getting very frayed at the edges. And people And it's very important that you be able to trust the judicial system and that I be able to trust the judicial system, because we live in a country of laws. And the only body we have to enforce our laws is our court system. And so I think it's very important that before we attack our court system, we figure out what we're going to replace it with and how it's going to operate in the absence of our existing court system, because our court system is clearly directly under attack. And it's under attack by your approach to it, as well as by Donald Trump's approach to it now, and as well by lots of other people. And I'm very fearful of that. How do we replace our court system if our court system isn't adequate or working in its current form?
I believe that your current president and your convenient omission of the Obama-appointed judge is loud and clear.
Well, no, CJ,
can I just...
No, you can't. You? No, CJ. We're having a conversation, and we talked back and forth in a conversation, and there was no convenient inadvertence about whether the current judge was appointed by Obama or not. I simply pointed out that they weren't appointed by Biden, number one, and number two, that some of the judges who have dealt with Trump so far were Trump appointments. That's really all I said. And who appointed the judge shouldn't be as significant as you make it. If we think that who appointed the judge is the definition of whether justice will result, we have a fractured judicial system, okay? It's broken, if that's the basis on which we're going to trust it or not. So when you attack a judge simply because of who appointed them, and the inference of who appointed them is that they will not operate fairly, you understand that that attack has two edges. And everybody who's not politically in agreement with you will attack the outcome of every judge that was appointed by Trump. So what are we going to do about that?
The point that is, I'm pointing out to you, I'm not attacking the judges or anybody else. I'm appointing it to you and your convenient omission. But I would like you to actually discuss the facts that have happened in the last two elections that are happening in this one. There's two tiers of justice.
Okay.
And that's what the Durham report.
Hey CJ, thank you very much for the call. We don't have time to go through all those things. Sandy, your point is 100% accurate and valid, and yet he doesn't want to address it, because if he addresses it, it will expose the fact that, again, so every time you go in front of a judge, well, Ronald Reagan appointed that judge. Jimmy Carter appointed that judge. So we can dismiss it because either a Democrat appointed him, and so since a Democrat appointed that person, we can't trust that person. Only Republicans who are appointed by Republicans. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying.
Well, of course, and whether I omitted the fact that Obama appointed the current the judge in D.C. that is currently handling this case or not would only be important if importance was placed on the notion that it was an Obama-appointed judge, and therefore the decisions that will be rendered are suspect as the result of that. And so, you know, I didn't even introduce the concept of who appointed what judges. You know, that was a concept that was being introduced, in fact, by Trump and others. We need to have a judicial system that disregards that whole set of facts.
Well, we had that kind of a system, and we have that kind of a system. It's just a certain segment of the society that is now saying that, Sandy.
Well, except that it has become habit. It turns out that when you read a newspaper article about something, they'll tell you who appointed the judge. And so we've gotten to this point where we decide that this part of the pedigree of a judge is very important with respect to how we view what they do and how they behave. And it's part of the problem we have, because maybe our courts have become more partisan in their behavior.
Let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what,
oh,
sir?
Morning. Happy Indictment Day. You know, I was listening to, I guess it was one of the other shows the other day, and they had a comedian on there, John Fugelsang, and he came up with a line that Trump's defense is he has the right to lie. And apparently his lawyers are trying to spin, you know, Trump's actions that way. And so Fugelsang's quote was, the right to life movement has turned to the right to lie movement. And so I think that's a pretty good quote. And when you start thinking about Trump's trying to suborn the Secretary of State of Georgia into lying about how many votes Trump really got. Trump lost in Georgia, and Trump spent over an hour, I'm not sure if it was an hour and a half, but it was over an hour just haranguing the Secretary of State into lying about how many votes he got. So that's called suborning, if I remember right, and that's where a liar is trying to induce another person into lying for them. And so that's that to me is a major part of this that's not being expressed.
Well, I turn to Bill Barr, who has had some interesting interviews over the past couple of weekends. And one weekend ago, he discussed this notion of free speech and how it is that speech is involved in many crimes. And the fact that it's speech is not a defense in all circumstances. Lying is permitted in politics, just like lying is permitted in many circumstances, unless the lie is part of a conspiracy to induce conduct that is a violation of the law. And that's conspiracies are all about speech. Frauds are all about speech. And so when the president's proclivity to not telling the truth turns into using speech to try and induce conduct that is illegal, that's a crime. And that's what's going to be tried in the news media and in the courts over the next while.
All right. Good morning to you, Julie from Franklin. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hi, good morning, guys. Well, I think we need to lighten up the conversation a little. And I take a, like, bigger view on all of this. Where in our society where we work in companies, can high-level, you know, CEOs, CFOs get away with the kind of stuff that the people that run our country get away with? I there's right and wrong. I don't know why it can't just be that simple. And yet, you know, quite frankly, we need to find a cell for Trump and Biden to share. Hunter can be down the way, and whoever else has done things that are against the law. And let's move on and get some people running the country that, you know, want to run the country. It's not about, you know, what they can get for themselves.
Well, other than not understanding.
Hey, thank you very much for the call, Julie.
Other than not understanding exactly who ought to be in what prison or in what cell, I agree with you. I think the one thing that we definitely need to do is move on from the current leadership age cadre, Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden, Donald Trump. All these septuagenarians and octogenarians need to hand the reins on and let someone else step up so that we can see some fresh air with respect to our leadership. We as the people, however, are going to have to hold those new people's feet to the fire to make sure they do what we want them to do.
So I agree with you, Sandy, but it ain't going to happen, right?
No.
And it's not going to happen before the 2024 election. And we're going to be stuck with this going into this election, and it's going to be a mess, right? There's no way that any of these things are going to be cleared up before the 2024 election. Is it safe to say that?
You know, every every decade, we all say, boy, we've never lived in a decade like this. This is the, but you know what? We never have lived in a time quite like this, where we have this specter hanging over us. You know, Watergate hung over us for a year, no longer. It was a pretty short-lived kind of a political disaster that ended. I don't see this one ending anytime quickly.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I think people are already exhausted. And so all these other things going on, all these things take a back seat. And so the clarion call is, let's put this trial on television so the people can see it.
Yeah.
And so what's to be gained by that, Sandy?
Well, this is the ultimate shiny object. You know, the fact that Donald Trump thinks that his personal power is more important than the stability of our democracy or more important than accomplishing anything else, because what's going to happen over these next months is we will accomplish nothing other than having this unbelievably shiny object. And this is like looking at the sun, right? You'll damage your eyes and your brain, because we're going to be seeing and hearing and talking about this day in and day out. You know, part of what Donald Trump accomplished, other than undoubtedly earning the ire of the D.C. judge when he posted this over the weekend, is that he has made it absolutely mandatory that we all talk about it. You know, when an ex-president says, if you come after me, I'll come after you, in the context of a criminal proceeding in which he's involved, you can be damn sure that it is the subject of conversation
news
everywhere.
All right, let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning to you, Gary. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Well, you know, Donald Trump, whether you agree or not, is getting stronger every time, every day, every time he gets indicted.
He's only getting stronger to the people who support him.
Well, but it is true. It is true that his polling numbers in the Republican primary polling numbers, he has gotten stronger in his polling numbers since the beginning of these various indictments.
No question.
So there, you know, you're absolutely right, Gary. He's getting stronger, and you know, his tongue-in-cheek comment over the weekend, "I'm only one indictment away from winning the presidency," you know. Who knows whether that's true or not, but it's a pretty sad commentary.
Yeah, but I think it is true. Now, you know, and when he first announced he was running for president, I voted for him the last time. But then I thought, okay, it's time to go away and let's start fresh and we'll go someplace else. We'll go with DeSantis or something like that, you know. Or, you know, I had an open mind. But I don't think that there's a Republican candidate that's strong enough to take on the Democrats, except for Donald Trump. And he's showing me this, and I'm getting more excited about Donald Trump. Now, there's a lot of things about Donald Trump that I cannot stand. You know, I really can't. He just got to keep his mouth shut. And the thing about going after, you go after me, I'm going to go after you, really irritates me that he does stuff like this. But he is getting stronger, and every time that they indict him, he's getting stronger with independents also. I mean, it's so divided. We have such a divided country right now. It's really sickening.
Here's Gary.
I do not like it.
Gary, here's an honest question. If we were having lunch together, I'd ask you this. What is it about the Democrats that you find so very, very troublesome that you would make a statement like, I don't really, you know, you have a lot of problems with Donald Trump, but he might be the only political candidate for the Republicans who can take on those Democrats and beat them. What is it about the Democrats that makes you so concerned about them that you'll compromise your thinking in that manner in order to beat them? And this is an honest question. I'm trying to understand the divide, and you could maybe help me do that.
Sandy, I was born and raised a Democrat. I was a Democrat after I was married until 1980 when Ronald Reagan ran, and I changed. But the Democrats, they are so far left. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton, he was a halfway decent president. I made money in the stock market. The business was doing well. But the Democrats are so far
Well, wait, now, Gary, you are making money in the stock market right now.
No, I'm talking about.
No, I know, but I mean, if you're going to measure presidencies by whether you make money in the stock market, people made money during the entire Obama administration. They lost their shirt at the end of the Bush administration. But, you know, I think we all need to figure out what it is that's, you know, because so far left, Obama was actually a centrist president in almost every regard.
So was Bill Clinton,
and Bill Clinton was definitely a centrist president. And I'm not sure that Biden so far has exhibited anything but centrism.
That's correct.
In his policies. So I have trouble understanding how people have persuaded themselves that the Democrats represent such a big threat. But it's clear, and it's that many have, and you have. And so I think that's important for me to understand and people to understand.
Well, Sandy, the thing is, I think Biden was kind of a centrist until his handlers got a hold of him, and now they can't go left enough.
Well, which things have they done that have been so left? I mean, DeSantis takes on this whole woke thing.
Where's their crime to go left?
But there's lots of talk about a woke culture, but the government is doing almost nothing with respect to implementing the things that are woke. Most of what people complain about being woke is being implemented by corporations and the private sector.
I'm sorry, sir, okay, but
we got to shut this
but
down. What, huh?
But Gary, where is there a crime to go left? You know, you guys, the Republicans go far to the right. So, but yet you condemn people and say they go too far to the left. What about people saying Republicans go too far to the right if we're going to make it that simplistic?
Well, the thing is this. Look at the women's soccer this week.
Oh.
These girls have been – no, listen. These girls are so far woke, they won't sing the national anthem.
Gary, we don't Gary, I wish we had more time, but we don't have time. We're done. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy went too fast, as always. But you'll be back on Friday. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. I'll see you guys on tomorrow.